Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today we have J.E. Skeets from No Dunks. Excited to have Skeets on. That's coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. The NBA Cup has been determined. Next Tuesday, the Magic, Heat, Raptors, Knicks, and then on Wednesday, the Thunder, Suns, and Lakers, Spurs. So it's a good time to check in on all eight of those teams today. Person I'm bringing on to do that is J.E. Skeets. Skeets, how are you?
What's up, KOC? Thanks for having me on. We're talking cup. We respect the cup here. I'm pumped to talk to you, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. It's been a while. I think it was in Toronto in 2019, last time you and I did a show together. So I'm excited to talk about these teams. So I asked you a thought, an observation, a question, concern, a fake trade, whatever it is, anything you'd like, one thing for each of these eight teams. What team do you want to start with, Skeets?
Well, let's start with the team that never loses. Let's go with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think, I guess there's two sort of obvious questions. Can the Thunder win 70 plus games? And if you want to get really crazy, can the Thunder set the all-time record for wins and actually get to somehow, it sounds insane to say out loud, but 74 wins. I think the 70 plus wins is a little more fun to chew on, but it's sort of unreal that they are now, what, the fifth team in NBA history to start a season with 19 wins in their first 20. Now they're 20-1 after taking care of the Blazers on Sunday. And yeah, can they be the third team to win 70-plus? MJ's Bulls and Steph Curry's Warriors. Are we looking at the next squad here? I didn't think they could do it in the preseason when we were looking at over-unders. I think I took the under, which now looks really silly because it was like sort of low. It was like maybe 63, 64. They're going to fly by that. And now 70's in play, KOC. It is. They're that good. They're that deep. That's the main part.
Absolutely, they are that deep. I mean, they do it to start the season without J-Dub, without Jalen Williams, their second best player, all defensive caliber guy, all NBA caliber guy to start the year, and now they're going to be doing it without Isaiah Hartenstein for a while as he's sidelined. But it's like it just doesn't seem to matter with this team, and they're currently on pace. I mean, 20 of their 21 games they've won, on pace for 78 wins, so they have a little bit of wiggle room. it's absolutely unbelievable. It's hard to fathom that it's happening. There's no championship hangover. That's the thing. Like, so many teams, there's a dip. So I don't think anybody should poke fun at you or whatever, or hate on you saying, how'd you take the under? How could you do that? It's like, I don't know. This happens all the time. Nobody's repeated for 7 years. A championship hangover would have been acceptable, right?
That's exactly right. That was my thinking. I thought at the very least the defense would slip a little bit because of, you already won the title. You can take your foot off the gas. It's better. And I love this. I love that we're starting with this because, while talking through this team, all we're doing is laughing because that's all you can sort of do when you watch them play. I think it is fun this year more than last year.
I laugh at everything. I laugh and it gets me in trouble. So.
I laugh a lot too, so don't worry about that. If they're going to hate on us for being happy, okay, whatever. Yes, but, it's like I like that they're playing some close games now, so we get to see them in the clutch and we get to see the reigning MVP take over down the stretch. I mean, that was like a clinic against the Blazers on Sunday. Like, it was a close game. Blazers were putting up a fight, and then it was SGA time. I think he went 4 or 5 in the clutch, had a beautiful dime to Chet underneath for another basket. He wasn't even living at the free throw line in that game down the stretch. So just to see how incredible they are after the title, no hangover, like you said. And I guess now looking at it, it's like everyone is super young. Everyone is still improving individually. Their cohesion, the confidence, it only grows with more time together. And they are clearly motivated to, crush their opponent rather than coast through any sort of game or regular season. So, yeah, it's pretty. I think this is going to be really fun as we get, more into obviously the season of keeping our eye on that magical number 70, which I think that's the fun number. Again, 74 maybe, but I think 70 is cool.
I agree. 70 is the fun number, but 74 is in reach. And I think one of the reasons why is my observation with the OKC Thunder this year is that OKC is scoring 1.24 points per isolation by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And that's currently the best all-time number in the player tracking era. Best all-time. SGA exceeds his 1.22 number set two seasons ago in the 23-24 season over Kevin Durant, Tyrese Haliburton, Chris Paul, James Harden with their 2017-18 Rockets offense. Those two guys both on there. And so with SGA playing at this level, with him as a scorer, with him as a passer, regardless of what he's doing, I think you talk about OKC's depth and the amount of different lineups they can play, the elite defenders they have at every position, the different front court combinations they can play. They also have the best isolation shot creator in the game today, one of the best we have ever seen. So they can play in flow, play in motion, play through different guys, but they can also just turn to this guy in the end game situations. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, a lot of this offense and their success comes off of their defense. There's no doubt. But great point that in a close game, you can turn. Like, what a luxury to be able to turn to one of the best sort of ISO guys we've seen over a stretch now of all time in SGA. I mean, the confidence he has in getting to his spot, going left, step back right, whatever. Like, there's no defender that I think that he thinks can at least stop him. In a one-on-one situation, given enough room. And if they send multiple guys, he's more than capable as a passer, and they have great shooters on that team and other guys stepping up. So it's a dangerous squad, and you know, you just hope everybody, I was going to say everybody stays healthy for the most part, but yeah, they missed J-Dub forever. Now Iheart's out. Who's to say another guy or two won't be out? But it won't matter, because Daigneault plays all his guys, trusts all these guys, and they believe in that system so much that it is a bit of a plug and play. So great team.
Yeah, they are a great team, an all-time team. One of the best teams that we covered the Warriors 10 years ago with their chase surpassing the Bulls. They lose in the finals, and we'll see how this ends up resulting for OKC come April, May, and June. But ultimately, this is one of the better teams I've watched in my time as an NBA fan since the late 90s. It's truly, truly remarkable what they do defensively, how much better they are defensively than everybody else. And so I would pick them to win over 70. To your point, Skeets, like, beating 73, that's really unbelievable. But we'll see. We'll see there. I one thing I do look forward to seeing is with the NBA Cup. I've long said that I think the Cup will generate meaning when someday a team wins the Cup, finishes with the best regular season record, and wins the NBA Finals, like an NBA triple crown, if you will, for a team. And I think OKC has a real chance of doing that. They face the Suns with their first NBA Cup game to qualify for Vegas. I'd expect them to win the Cup. I'll pick them to win the Cup, assuming they're healthy next week when it's time for predictions for that. But let's move to the Suns here, because my observation about them is Dylan Brooks is in heaven. Dylan Brooks is having the time of his life right now. This season, he's averaging 17.1 field goal attempts per game to 1.7 assists. He is not passing the ball. He is not being asked to pass the ball. Just score. He has 257 shot attempts this season. 97 of those have been pull-up jumpers, and he's hitting them, Skeets. 57% from mid-range, 38% from three on pull-ups. The dude's been awesome. It's just amazing to watch Dylan Brooks get back to doing what he loves to do, and that's just score, 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 and do nothing else on offense.
Look, I'm going to have to come on this podcast a lot more if we're just going to talk about Canadians, KOC, SGA, and now Dylan the villain, Dylan Brooks. I love it. This is right in my wheelhouse. Yeah, he is. He's been a revelation. You know, I think a lot of people assume, rightfully so, he's going to come in and help change the identity of defense. Like, yeah, that's him, right? He plays hard, whether you love him or hate him. You usually love him when he's on your team. You hate him when you're going against him. But he's going to give you defensive purpose and obviously a drive on that end. It's this offense that is like, whoa, where did this come from? And pretty consistent, too. So cool to see. I love having the Sun sort of back, you know, just in the conversation. Like, we do a lot of shows, right? And there's a lot of teams to talk about. And last year, it was like, after the disaster start and like, hey, blow it up, trade these guys, get off of this. It's like, you never talked about the Phoenix Suns because there was no point. Now you get to a lot more here, and you get to sort of like praise Devin Booker again and all these other guys, all these former Hornets centers contributing to this team. So yeah, Dylan Brooks deserves a good chunk of the credit here in helping turn the Sun season around here on both ends. The offense is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been crazy to see. He's changed the culture for sure. I mean, like at HBA, the Suns owner, it looks like he'll be correct that the team will be better this year than they were last year. Granted, it was a low bar. Do you have a thing for the Suns, or do you want to move on to the next team?
Well, I just think what's funny about the Suns, or I guess my question for you and everyone listening and watching, is like, what does a successful Suns season look like at this point, right? Because it's pretty clear, as we talked about, they're not the joke that they were last year, and they're not the joke that even some people thought they might be still this year. A lot of people had the Suns, you know, under like their 31 and a half wins, maybe in the play-in and all that. Off to this pretty good start. They've struggled against the West's best. That's not a shock. You know, they just lost to the Rockets. They lost to OKC in a close game. They lost to the Nuggets over the weekend. They have a hellish schedule coming up here. They play on the road, Lakers, Rockets again, Wolves, and Thunder again. Mm. So, you know, those might be the four best teams in the West. But where do they, like, look at a successful season? Matt Ishbia says wins and losses don't matter when we came into this year. But what do you think, KSC? Like, what's a good year for the Suns at this point?
I mean, I think at this point, the way they've started this season, as you said, they haven't beaten the best in the West yet. If they can start to get some of those, it'd be nice. But I think, like, just plainly not being in the lottery, like just not right. being in the lottery, being at least like in the top eight, making the playoffs as an eight seed out of the play-in, to me would be a victory for them. I mean, before the season, I had my old co-host Chris Vernon on the show, and he's like, well, we have the Suns pick this year. You know, he's excited about that. Well, you know, right. I think if that's a win, if you're not giving your pick away to one of your rivals in the Western Conference. And so by doing that, that also means that your team was good enough. It sustained some of this new culture, this character that they have over the course of the year. I'm sure that would mean, you know, good things from the young guys. Colin Gillespie continues to look like a really good six man. It would mean that Ryan Dunn continues to develop on both ends of the floor. It means that, who knows, maybe Kaman Malawach gets some minutes at some point over the course of the season as well. Like, I think making the playoffs indicates that good things were happening for the individual players on your roster. And so I think that's how I would define it as success for the Suns this year. And is that unfair though? Because how loaded the Western Conference is. I mean, but at the same time, it's a little weaker in the middle or bottom, more so than expected, because the Clippers are so bad. The Kings are absolute dog crap. I mean, like, the Warriors look average. So it's like, maybe it is reasonable to expect that from Phoenix this year.
I think we're on the right path here. I think a really good season, if they are flirting with 500 and are like in the play-in conversation, and maybe, like you said, winning their way in to the actual playoffs. I think that's a great season. It's funny how they're winning these games. Like, they're shooting a really good percentage from three. I think they're top five still in the league when it comes to three-point percentage, around 37-38%. They do work on the offensive glass. Mark Williams, when he plays, man, that guy gobbles up offensive rebounds. And their defense has generated a lot of turnovers. Now, unfortunately, they give up the ball a lot too, so it starts to equal out. But they are good at generating turnovers and scoring in transition that way. So this is how they're winning games. Again, they're not, no one's including them with the best of the West, but they at least have separated themselves from some of these other crappy teams, like you said, disappointing teams. They don't seem to be that. And off of what happened last year, that's a step in the right direction. That I keep, like, they want to replicate what the Rockets did a couple years ago when they were like on the come up, right? You know, with that 30, then 40 wins, and then obviously jump up another level. That's the path they need to hopefully replicate.
Yes. Building a foundation and then making the trade at some point to hopefully capitalize on that. Which team do you want to go to next, Skeets?
Well, let's stick in the West. Let's go with the Lakers. My question, my comment more, I guess, than a question, Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves are the best offensive duo in the NBA. The numbers are nuts. They've been nothing short of unstoppable for the 15-4 Lakers now. The two, Luka and AR, are averaging nearly a combined 64 points per game. So the two are attempting like nearly half of the Lakers' shots from the field, 80% of the team's free throws. Like, these guys are carrying, because LeBron was out for so long there, their offense. There was a lot of concern. Maybe there still is about the Lakers' defense, but at this point, it doesn't matter with these guys. just the level they're both playing at, and the camaraderie between these two, like seemingly best friends, like cracking on each other left and right. I think I didn't believe Austin Reeves had this sort of level of him. I have to admit, I thought it was, oh, he plays for LA and he gets all of this buzz and all this talk because he's in a big market. I've been proven wrong. Like the more I watch him, the more I'm like, oh my God, this guy's, he is phenomenal. So that's my comment, I guess, for the Lakers.
I mean, it's funny. I remember your last thing you said about Austin Reeves made me think about a long time ago. I made a video breakdown of Alex Caruso, and it was like Alex Caruso is more than a meme. Like, because at the time people thought of him as just, oh, he's LeBron's teammate. He's a white guy. He's balding.
Yeah.
He's just an energy guy. And it's like, well, no, this guy is more than a meme. And that obviously has turned out to be the case. He went on to have some great times with the Bulls, wins a championship again with the Thunder. So I think with he proved that. Austin Reeves, sticking with the Lakers, somehow not going to Dallas in the Luka trade. I still don't understand how he wasn't acquired in that deal. It's beside the point. He is proving more than I ever could have anticipated with Austin Reeves. This guy was a bucket getter in college. He was a bucket getter early in his career. But to be averaging nearly 30 points per game on elite efficiency out of ISOs and pick and roll. It's not like he's just banging, you know, three-pointers off the catch and attacking closeouts, and these are quote-unquote easy buckets. These are self-created non-assisted chances against elite defenders a lot of the time. And that's where it's like, okay, I don't think anybody could have anticipated this from Austin Reeves. I mean, a 20-point-per-game guy, 25 points per game, maybe, but almost 30? On this level of workload, it's mind-blowing. It really is mind-blowing, Skeets, to see him play at this level. It really is.
Yeah, you hit on it there. It feels sustainable. That's the crazy part. Like, this, like, I know it's still small sample size, I guess, sort of. He missed a few games, but we are a quarter of the way through the season. It feels very sustainable, and he is averaging, 29, 7, and 6. He's shooting 52% from the field. And then, of course, Luka, Luka's even crazier at the 35 and basically 9 and 9. So the pair of them together, and it's nuts because then now LeBron comes back, and Trey on No Dunks, he's basically now calling LeBron like Super Iguodala. The role that he can play.
Comp.
And I'm like,
that's such a good comp.
it's sort of right. Because Bron has been asking for 4 or 5 years, if we're being honest, or sort of like, hey, can somebody else take the torch at least offensively, basically since the Disney title. And now you get the Luka trade. My God, that falls into your lap. And then Reeves, leveling up here. He easily slots into the third best guy. And that's scary in and of itself. And all the other guys are doing their part. I mean, Ayton's been awesome. He's shut up a lot of haters. Rui's had his moments. LaRavia, you go on down the line. JJ Redick has these guys buying in. I think they're going to, I hope we get a Thunder Lakers battle in Vegas in the semifinals for the cup. I think that would be an awesome, awesome game. But they've shocked me how great the Lakers have started this season. And a big part of it is Austin Reeves pairing with Luka, giving him 30 a night.
Nuts. I mean, they do look like legitimate contenders to me, but to be a team that can actually defeat the Thunder in the postseason, I think that's going to come down to their defense. And that's my question about the Lakers. How can the Lakers solve their defense? This season, they're 17th in defensive rating. And the interesting thing is with them is they have a 106.7 defensive rating when Marcus Smart is on the floor to a 118.3 defensive rating without Marcus Smart. And so that 106.7 is the equivalent of number two behind Oklahoma City. And 118.3 is bottom 10 in the NBA when he's off the floor. And he's out right now. LeBron's return also cuts into his minutes. But ultimately, I think with this smart situation, are there any other answers on this team internally to improve point of attack, wing defense? I don't think so. I don't think the answer lies within for the Lakers. And so that's where I kind of look at this team, Skeets, and I'm like, they have these future picks. They have a 26 swap, 28 swap, 30 swap, and they can trade their 31 or 32 first, and the other one would be a swap. So they only have one future first that they can give. That changes on draft night next year when they'll have three tradable first, but I'm looking at the team this year and I'm like, why not go get somebody like a Herb Jones? Like, make an offer. Give Gabe Vincent maybe, Dalton Connect, a future first, maybe a little bit more if you have to, one of the swaps possibly to the Pelicans. Why not at least make an effort? Because I think this team is that legit offensively. And if they can stagger Smart and LeBron, LeBron being kind of the quarterback of the defense, helping communication and intensity when he's on the floor, and then Smart coming off the bench with serving that role, and then add a guy like Herb Jones on top of this, that's where things get pretty interesting with this team's offense, then being supported by what would be like a borderline top 10 defense.
I mean, I knew I was coming on the KOC podcast. We were going to get some fake trades, baby. And this one's, it's intriguing here. Yeah. Look, that's a, look, if the Lakers can pull that off, that's a great trade. They get Herb Jones for, you know, Gabe Dalton and maybe just a pick or two, you know, obviously with protections of some sorts. I think they would do that in a heartbeat because all of these teams, the Thunder, you know, the Wolves with Ant, the Rockets with Durant and their crew, like, yeah, it'd be nice to have like a lockdown defender. Hey, Herb, don't worry about offense. We got guys that could, we got like basically three guys that could score 30 in their sleep. Lock in, shut down the other team's best offensive player. Yeah, that'd be a dangerous upgrade for them on the wing. But right now they're just like, who cares? We'll just outscore you. and we feel good when we get into an end of game situation because we got Luka. AR lights out. And then, yeah, again, LeBron, I know he's in year 1000, but still, you can trust him to make a right play at the end of a game, be it a shot or setting a guy up, and he's going to orchestrate that as well. And maybe just wins a game on a defensive stop because he can still like have that explosiveness for a possession or two. So that's an interesting trade, though.
And we'll be right back after this break. Lakers are going to face the Spurs in their NBA Cup quarterfinal. What's your thing for the Spurs?
Yeah, this is one I sort of struggled with in this thought experiment. I guess something that jumped out to me is another great example of why teams that are young and on the come up, it's positive to have a vet or two around to just help you win regular season games, potentially playoff matchups. I'm talking about Harrison Barnes has had a couple of these moments already. And then De'Aaron Fox, you know, not a vet on that squad, he sort of is as he hits his prime here, but they've played winning basketball, helping the other younger guys, despite all the injuries to, you know, Wemby, Castle, and Harper. Their foundation, their future. And it's just another example. We've seen this time and time again, KOC, of teams, they have guys like this. We've seen it with the Pistons and how it resulted into a winning team. And I think the Spurs have replicated that, so to speak, of have some guys that are professional damn ball players around and can help your chances night in, night out.
We are exactly along the same lines with the Spurs. I think with them, the most important development in San Antonio, it's not Wemby taking a leap right now. It's the fact that they look like a good team without Victor Wembanyama. That's just the reality of it here. They're 5-2 since Victor got hurt. Fox is averaging 26.1 points per game, 7.1 assists per game, looking like an all-star type of guy in those games without Wemby. Vassell, 19.7 points per game on 44% from three. He looks great. Johnson, Barnes, Champagne, they look like a legit wing support. Carter Bryant, not even ready yet, and he's still waiting in the wings. Their front court versatility with Cornette, Olynyk's back, Jeremy Sochan. And this stretch, you know, these seven games without Victor also includes, as you said, only three games by Harper, only one game by Castle. They're not even at full strength yet. And so look at the numbers with the Spurs. Last year without Wemby, they had a minus 6.1 net rating. This year, they have a plus 1.8 net rating in the minutes without Victor. And so once Wemby returns, he's coming to a team that feels like they're competitive without him. And then you add this guy, a top five-ish, top 10 definitely, player in the NBA to their defense and to their offense as well. Well, I mean, those non-Victor minutes are going to look pretty good, and the minutes with him potentially could be dominant. And so I think, to me, that's where I look at the Spurs and I'm like, the question has long been for them to catch up and become contenders in the NBA is the rest of the roster taking shape around Wembanyama, because his development is inevitable provided he stays healthy. But this is where I look at them, Skeets, and I'm like, okay, things are starting to come together. It makes sense. We'll figure out some of the, you know, wrinkles with the shooting and all that along the lines, but the team looks competitive. It's nice to have vets around, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of people were expecting the Spurs to go into Denver on Friday night with a chance to obviously go to the knockout round here in advance, and having the Spurs beating Denver like that. We showed it in that clip there. Devin Vassell hit that huge three, had a monster game, 35 points on Friday night, 12 of 17 shooting, hit seven threes, including that one to put them up late. And then Champagne, great, lived at the line. I mean, 25 and 10 from him, slotting into a bigger role with some of these injuries. And you're right, Dylan Harper was back off the bench. So yeah, they're just like, it's not just Wemby. And I think that's the best thing moving forward. It's like all these other pieces. And a part of it, again, is those older guys in Harrison Barnes and Fox, who's been, as you went through the numbers, really good over this stretch. Like, I don't think people would even be upset if they were 2-5 over the last seven without Wemby. I would be like, yeah, well, you don't have a guy that's like going to be a perennial MVP guy. And it's to be opposite of that is scary. And, you know, like, I don't think many people would pick them to win the cup here. I don't know. What's Wemby's status? Like, any chance he's back for any of these cup games moving forward?
When he first got hurt, it was in line with around the cup. So
okay.
We'll see. But as far as I know, there hasn't been an update. I haven't heard. I'm sure the NBA would very, very, very much love him to be ready for Lakers Spurs. I'm sure they would love him to be out there for that game.
Oh, they would love that. And I don't, my gut says he won't be back for that Lakers game. But if there's another huge Vassell game or Fox game and they upset the Lakers because they'll be in LA, yeah, the NBA would love to have him in Vegas,
Thunder
for sure.
Thunder Spurs on Saturday. Woo! that would be a great game to see. But so with Thunder Lakers, we'll see if the Suns, you know, ruin everybody's plans though and win that game. Let's talk about some East teams. We have the Magic and the Heat, the Raptors and the Knicks. Where do you want to start with those teams?
We'll start with the top seed in the East. Let's go with the Magic. My question, I don't mean to be spicy about it at all, but I want to hear your opinion, is Franz Wagner more important than Paolo Banchero for the Orlando Magic? So I'm wording that not like, hey, trade Paolo Banchero. I'm just saying, is Franz, the way the makeup of this current Magic team, is he more important right now to Orlando than Paolo? Or is that silly to even throw out there?
I mean, I've long said Franz is better than Paolo. I just think he's the better defensive player. I think he moves with a purpose, you know, quick decisions, attacking. Paolo's more dribble, and both are very good players, and Franz has his flaws as well. And as a shooter especially, but I, you know, my question for them was like, is there anything to the Magic playing their best basketball since Paolo Banchero was sidelined? So we're really thinking along the same lines here with them, because it's just, I mean, the ball's moving, you know, decisions are happening quicker. It's more touches for Anthony Black and Desmond Bane and Jalen Suggs. And I really don't know the answer to the question, to your question or my question here. Because Banchero individually in a vacuum is a really, really good basketball player. He is. It's undeniable.
Yeah.
But for some reason, things are just sometimes click a bit better without him offensively, and the defensively he has his shortcomings as well. Yep. And so one thing I will say, Skeets, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this, is when Banchero came back last year, the Magic were just like ravaged by injury, and it wasn't a good situation for him to return to. Whenever he comes back sometime this month to the Magic, he's coming back to a great situation. The team is playing at a high level. The defense has finally figured it out. So I think this is going to be really the good barometer test for the impact he makes on winning. Does he negatively impact the team when he returns, or is he additive to the team and suddenly they start looking like the favorites in the Eastern Conference? I think that's going to provide us the answer to our question. I really do.
Yeah, that's right, because there is some context to this, right? Like, the Magic started off as a team pretty rough, you know, trying to get Desmond Bane into the flow with the new team. I think Jamal Mosley was still figuring out his rotations with Suggs in and out of the lineup. So they start 1-4. Now they've won, I guess, what, 11 of their last 16, and they're starting to look like the squad most of us anticipated heading into the season. I think a lot of us were like, oh yeah, they might even be on the tier with, we thought, the Knicks and the Cavs. Obviously, the Cavs have had a rough start, but the Knicks are there. I think that's pretty clear. So there was the rough start. But yeah, the numbers back it up. I mean, last year, Franz Wagner, when he's not out there, they went 8-14 in the games Paolo missed. They maintained a positive record, right? They went 20-16. And so that goes into this year. I thought it was fun to hear the NBA on Prime crew talk about this on Friday night. You know, Zach Lowe got it started. And he said what you said, KOC. He's like, the court looks more open. The ball is popping a little bit more around. They're completely different players, but there's some similarities to how the teams look when they're off the floor between Trae Young and the Hawks and Paolo and the Magic. Like, those two guys don't look anything alike, nor do they really play alike, but their teams sort of play similar when they're both off the floor.
it's a perfect comparison. It really is.
Yeah.
Like, there's a flow to Atlanta right now. And more usage for Jalen Johnson. Just that player type is there's a flow to the team.
Yeah,
and unlike there is with Trae, where Trae is a great player, but it's pick and roll, high pick and roll. You know, he also has his defensive shortcomings. Yes, it's predictable. Yeah. That's the word exactly. And it's the same thing with Orlando with Banchero. And that's the thing. Like Banchero, in theory, Banchero should be able to work in this offense. It should be able to work with him this way. In theory, if he just moves a little quicker, a little bit more decisively, I think this can work. And that's where the big question is going to be later this month. I think the answer to your question about, you know, Franz's importance over Banchero, like I said, I've always been a Franz guy. But Banchero, the way I look at it is Franz right now is better than Paolo Banchero. But for the Magic to win a finals, Paolo Banchero needs to be the best player on the team. That's the way I look at it. I believe there's a higher level to Banchero. I had him ranked number one in the year with Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith. I have a lot of belief in this guy. It's just there's certain things that need to click with him. And another comparison, you mentioned kind of like with the Hawks offense right now, these Banchero-Franz conversations are so much like Tatum and Brown in the past. It took that team a long time for the Celtics to finally reach the mountaintop and win the NBA Finals. It possibly could be the same case for the Magic. I mean, these guys are still under 25 years old. They're very young. They're not yet in their primes of their careers, nor is the roster, hopefully, the best that will ever be around them either. And so I think the Magic, I can't wait to see Banchero back, because that is definitely one of the biggest questions in the whole NBA is how does he impact this team? He won't be back next week, right?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see him for cup action here. But and to finish the thought on that NBA on Prime crew, it was Blake Griffin saying, like, yeah, there's an opportunity for Paolo to sacrifice. And Steve Nash talked about how the way the league is going, you got to make quick decisions. You have to be more unpredictable. That ball has to move. And it's important for us to try and see that evolution from Paolo when he comes back. And I agree with you. Like, he should fit with this defense, and he has, or this team, excuse me, you have an identity of a solid defense, and then you have all these other guys showing that they can play, and you give them touches, everybody can eat. So, you know, this, I think they'll, as the season progresses here, the Magic will start to climb the standings. I do believe in them for sure.
They are going to face off against the Miami Heat in their NBA Cup matchup next week. The Heat, they still aren't setting any screens this year. Tyler Herro, before he returned, had a quote. He's like, you know, I think over the course of the year, we'll start integrating a bit more pick and roll. Well, that hasn't happened yet. In his three games, the Heat ran 8 pick and rolls versus the Pistons, 5 against the Bucks, 11 against the Mavericks, which is below their season average of 10.2 per game. The next lowest team is the Utah Jazz at 26.8, the Warriors at 27.3, the Rockets at 27.5. And so, Herro returns. He's flourishing in this offense. These no screens, playing with motion and movement and cutting and some off-ball screens as well to get guys open. But it's looked great with Herro. Powell still is excelling as well. It's just very, very interesting on the topic of guys returning. Herro has come in and immediately fit. It immediately looks good with him offensively.
Offensively, I think, is the key word there. Because I do think at end of games, Herro gets picked on all the time. And like teams know it. Tyler Hero's not the first guy to get picked on the defensive end. We've already listed multiple guys. Obviously, Trae Young comes to mind. But they really, teams put him in action and go at him. And Spo has obviously these decisions to make when you get into this crunch time. Like, it's like, oh, we have guys that we can put out there that are more defensive minded guys, but then we lose that on the offensive end. We want to keep our star guy, like All-Star and Tyler Hero, happy. I know some people are saying they should move Tyler Hero. Like, he should be a guy that the Heat should sell, I guess, high on. It's a tough one, but he scores you a lot, but he gives a lot back is all I'll say about him. And I don't mean to crap on him here, but you just see teams go at him.
Oh, they absolutely do, for sure. And I think with Hero, that's going to be the thing with him come playoff time as well, assuming that he is a guy they end up keeping at that point. But, you know, the Pistons put 138 on him on Saturday. I mean, just couldn't get a single stop in that whole fourth quarter. Right. Now, granted, Miami put up 44 as well, and their, you know, bid to make a comeback. It was a close game down the stretch, but just all game, it just felt like can't stop Detroit at all. And it's not been the only game like that for Miami and for Hero, especially in his entire career. What's your thing for the Heat, or was it that Hero getting picked on?
No, it actually wasn't. But I have a very niche thing with the Heat. What is going on with Nikola Jovic? Why is he unplayable this year? Because he got an opportunity on Saturday versus the Pistons because Jaime Jaquez Jr. was sidelined. He's got a groin injury, I think. But Jovic, brutal in that game. 2 points, 5 turnovers in 10 minutes off the bench. He's played bad all season long, shooting 40% from the field, sub 30% from three. He's turning the ball over way too much. He fouls way too much. I don't know if you saw that one sequence in that Pistons game where Jovic just coughed up back-to-back embarrassing turnovers, like in the span of, like, I'm talking like 10 or 15 seconds. It was like, ooh. I know it's bad when the Heat broadcast, who are, I think, at the top of the homer list when it comes to broadcast, like, they were calling him out and like, what are you doing? You're just handing it to the other team. So it's strange because I thought he was a pretty important piece moving forward. You know, his name was always coming up in potential trade packages, and some people are like, oh, you can't trade him. Here he is in what, year four? I think he's in year four or five. And it's just like, he's like, I don't know. He seems unplayable to me for Spoelstra.
You know, it's interesting with Jovic pre-draft when you know, he's a Serbian prospect, everybody's like, oh, you know, Nikola Jokic, he's got a similar name and all that.
Right.
The thing with him that was interesting, he played for a Mega Basket overseas. And the thing that was interesting with him is offensively, so he grew up playing guard. And so offensively, he's always been good with the ball in his hands. And you would expect in this Heat offense, that would work perfectly. But the questions with him have been shooting consistency. That hasn't gone away. 36% from three in his career, 29% from three this year, below 80% from the free throw line. So he's not like a great touch guy. And then also defensively with him. Defensively, I thought overseas he had stretches where sometimes his you know, focus or intensity, that like engagement would come and go. And I still feel that with him today in Miami. And so I think with him, it's just like all these pre-draft questions about Jovic. You know, he's 22 years old now. I don't think that's any different. I think the scouting report is very much unchanged for Jovic. If he were an elite shooter, I think he'd be in the rotation. Because at least he could bang threes and attack a closeout. But to your point, sometimes he still has those sloppy turnovers as well. I mean, so the inefficiency hasn't gone away. Some of the defensive questions haven't gone away. And sometimes that's just the way it is for these young guys. I hope he develops it, you know, whether it's in Miami or somewhere else, because he's a 6'9 ball handler. He's talented. He could fit in a lot of different teams. He's still only 22, but year four, you would hope for more at this point from Jovic. That's for sure.
Yeah. And again, I think the Heat have so many guys now that Spo feels confident going with over him. So he has sort of gotten less opportunity. Maybe that's had an effect on him as well, you know, these last minutes. But he got an opportunity with Jaquez out, and it was, I mean, he made it. He did not make a strong impression to me, at least watching that game, because those turnovers, oh my God, like they were of the panic variety. It was like he's just handing it over to the Detroit Pistons. So, yeah, he still has belief in himself, I see here. So that's good.
I mean, granted, different positions, but he's been surpassed by Larson in minutes entering his second year. So, I mean, like you add Fontecchio as well, a veteran guy in his late 20s. He's played very well. And so those minutes and opportunities start to dwindle for Jovic. We'll be right back. we have two teams left, the Raptors and Knicks. My guess is you're going to save the best for last, but who do you want to go with first?
Oh, okay. If you want me to do it that way, yeah, I'll save the Raptors for last so that nobody can say I'm a homer starting with them or anything like that. All right. So the Knicks, my question for the Knicks, and this is perfect for someone like you, do you think the Knicks need to make a move before the NBA trade deadline? And I bring that up because they've played well. And I think, you know, are clearly one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. But to me, they could probably use some front court depth for the regular season specifically. Mitchell Robinson, classic Mitchell Robinson, right? He's on his load management sort of plan here. Looks great when he plays, but he's not out there all the time. And then the summer signing of Gershon Yabusele, he struggled. And I know Tass on No Dunks was high on that. A lot of people were, wow, a great signing. That makes sense. He just hasn't been good. So, you know, you're asking a lot from Kat. You're asking a lot from, unfortunately, in and out Mitchell Robinson. I just wonder if they need a little bit more size or maybe a backup point guard too. But I think this is a team, when you look at the landscape of the East, if they can shore up this roster even a little bit more, I mean, who's to say they couldn't go all the way to the finals and maybe put up a fight?
I do think they need a trade. And I think with them, my question for them is, are they actually the favorites in the East? I don't know if they are over the Pistons or if the Cavs can fix themselves or if the Magic are for real. I don't know if they're actually the favorites. I would lean towards, with a move, they could become the favorites. And so I think the answer to your question is yes, they should make a move. Yabu hasn't met expectations. The issue is that they don't have a lot to play with. They only have swaps. They can trade in the even number years, so 26, 28, 30, and 32. They don't have any outright first they can give up. So I'm not sure. Like, what are you gonna get? Like, are you giving up a player? Are you giving up Miles McBride? Are you giving up Tyler Kolek, hoping he can get you some value? But I don't think those guys are gonna net you needle moving acquisitions. And I don't want to trade Deuce McBride. I like Deuce McBride.
No,
you know what I mean? I don't think there's anybody that I'd want to give up that's part of that rotation, and I don't have assets. And so the answer is yes, but for what? that's my issue when I look at this team. Like, for what? Like, I don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, and when I say this, I'm not saying like Giannis hunting or a huge name. This is more like I'm sort of looking
around
at
the
like
edges,
they
right?
need in my yeah, around the edges and almost like an innings eater for the regular season here for the bigs. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't want to do Cat in, you know, during the regular season when we're going to need him in a postseason. You know, Mitchell, you never know. Mitchell Robinson, you're just like praying and hoping that he's good to go by the postseason. So I am thinking like, yeah, a level or two down. Well, definitely a level or two down from a Giannis. Like, could they get Goga Bitadze, like, from the Magic? Now, I know this is like a competitor in the East, so you don't want to do that if you're the Magic, maybe. But yeah, you're right. They don't have a lot to
name like that.
It'd probably be McBride. Yeah. Yeah,
you're just giving a general name, like somebody in that you know, general stratosphere as a player. I think those are the types of names you have to think about if you're a Knicks fan. But just, I don't think they should do this, but I just want to throw the thought to you. Is there any logic to putting one of your bigger name players on the table, say OG Anunoby? They've played very well without him in this stretch that he's been out. So is there any logic, you think, to putting one of your bigger fish on the table and then looking for a trade that reshuffles the team around your core pieces, Brunson, Bridges, Cat, and Hart?
I don't think so. With a wide open Eastern Conference that is there for the taking. And yeah, they've played well without OG. The Knicks played well with OG when he was there. So, you know, he was fantastic last year and, you know, started strong and all that. So I wouldn't do that. I keep those four and tinker around the edges like we're talking about here, either again in a sort of a capable backup point guard, probably a vet, just to spell Brunson a little bit, or I think more importantly, some front court depth to sop up some innings here, to use the baseball term, and to maybe help you in a playoff series. That's where I would be focusing. And again, I don't think it'd be huge, but yeah, it would probably have to be Yabusele, McBride, maybe a Kolek, so one of their young guys, and yeah, the little draft capital they have. But that might be enough to get a piece that could help. So I think there'll be a team that might be thinking that, because it's there. It is there, a path, very much a path. Especially with Josh Hart is playing too. I talked about him on No Dunks today. Josh Hart. I love Josh Hart. I would want him on my team in a heartbeat. I wish he was on the Raptors. He's just so does all the little things to help you win a game and filling up the box score around it. So, yeah, I think they'll do something minor. I would keep my eye on them.
Yeah, Josh Hart's been very good for my Yahoo Fantasy high score teams this year. I have him in two of my leagues, so he's been a great addition as a mid late first pick in those drafts. What's your thing for the Toronto Raptors, Skeets?
Okay, it's very clear here. The Toronto Raptors miss RJ Barrett, who left the game last week at this point with a knee injury against the Nets. But Barrett, without him, it's a bit of a different makeup offensively for the team. They just miss his very consistent 20 points per game. He was averaging 19.5, 5 boards, 4 assists, shooting 50% from the floor, a very average 35 from deep. Never good enough at the free throw line. I'll never understand why he sucks at the free throw line, but they miss him. And he's just one of those guys you don't need to run a single play for him, and he gives you 20. And it alleviates some of the pressure on Ingram and Scotty, and even quickly to that for that matter. So I think you've seen it here in this little stretch where the Raptors, you know, they lost to the Hornets, so the losing streak got ended at 9. They couldn't extend it to 10. Then they went into a tough spot in Madison Square Garden, a back-to-back, had to play the Knicks, down 20, suddenly right back in the game after Barnes couldn't miss a 3, and then quickly went on a run, and then gave it all back. That was a bit of a schedule loss, and maybe they're, you know, keeping their cards close to their chest, seeing that they're going to play the Knicks here in a cup game. I don't know if Darko was doing that, but point is, the Raptors miss RJ Barrett because the guys taking his place have not really lived up to any sort of expectations. Sophomore Jacoby Walter, he gets the starts in RJ's place. He's okay, he's fine, but obviously it's a big drop off. Abaji, he has struggled all season, but he still stays in the rotation. Grady Dick, the shot selection is pretty damn poor at times. I think a part of it is he's getting like less opportunity. So when he's out there, he maybe forces the issue a little bit. He looks at times like he's already decided he's going to shoot the ball before he even gets it, regardless of who's in front of him or the defense that collapses on him. Like, he's already one-tracked mind. So those three guys, like, these are basically their shooting guards here in place of RJ Barrett. He's missed. And a lot of people are like, oh, trade RJ Barrett, he makes too much money, all this. I think he's an important piece to the makeup of the Raptors with that hot start. So that's my sort of takeaway right now from them.
A couple things. I'll avoid the Grady Dick pun, but I will just say he's looking like a bust right now, unfortunately. for the Raptors. I was a Grady Dick fan pre-draft, and there's still a level of belief with him, but like, you gotta make threes. He's gotta make threes, and he's not making threes, yeah, on top of the shot selection issues you're talking about with him. Jacoby Walter as well. I liked him in the draft. Has not panned out yet. Granted, he's still super young, and I'm not panicking with him. You'd like to see more with the opportunity he's been given, especially in the role. It's like you're slotted into a role where I feel like he should be really excelling, but he's fine. So I'm not panicking. I think there's a lot of potential long term with him still. With RJ Barrett, I'm glad you brought him up, because one of the things that has been interesting to me, kind of in NBA draft circles, there's a prospect who plays for BYU called AJ DiBonsa, and he's 6'9". Mm-hmm. One of the comparisons people often throw out for him as a negative, people say he looks like a taller RJ Barrett. Can you explain to people who haven't watched much RJ Barrett how that's a compliment? If you're 3 inches taller than RJ Barrett, that's actually a good thing.
Oh my god, yeah, it's a good thing. The RJ Barrett hate is so weird to me. Like, I don't know if it was because he was in the, obviously, with the Knicks and the New York media, and there was more expectations. I mean, I get he's like one of these players that's a bit of a flirt, and that frustrates people. And I mean that, like, he'll have a monster game and you get all excited and you're like, oh, here we go. And then he'll have a game where he maybe disappears and is a little more quiet. And so maybe that's the frustration. But this year, or at least in his tenure with the Raptors, RJ Barrett, he is just good, man. I don't know. Again, he's not great, but he's good. And guess what? You add a bunch of good players together, you have a pretty good team, a good solid squad. And they miss him in part of that rotation. So yeah, that's not a knock at all. A taller RJ, I mean, you're going to be solid, in my opinion. Maybe he's like hardwired a little differently, because RJ can sort of come and go in a game from time to time. You can sort of forget maybe that he's out there. But I remember when when RJ played for Team Canada and he had to level up because of maybe more opportunity, he was fantastic too in those Team Canada games. I love that we started talking about Canadian guys and we're ending talking about Canadian guys. But yeah, that's not an insult to me. He's missed on this Raptors team where Shed's been really good off the bench. Mamu's been really good off the bench. Ingram looks like exactly what you want, a guy that can close games. Scotty Barnes is do it all. Like, his numbers may not be as great as they were in that All-Star season. I promise you, as a guy that watches a ton of Raptors games, he is like 10 times better than he was even as an All-Star with all the stuff he's doing. So yeah, I hope RJ backs soon enough. And you know, I'd love to see a cup run. People are always like, do you like the cup? And I'm like, I like the cup when my team's doing well. Yeah, when my team's in the cup knockout stage, it's a lot more fun. No, I love the cup. Overall, I think it's been a good addition to the early start of the season. But yeah
we'll it's fun. I wish they would put it together with all the games, you know, over a multi-week period instead of random nights during the season. But that's my only criticism of the scheduling of the games. The courts are a whole different conversation. My thing for the Raptors. Sandru Mamukelashvili belongs in the early sixth man of the year conversation. Mamu, I'll call him from here on out because his last name is too hard to actually say. 10.3 points per game this year, 40.4% from three, 1.7 assists, only 19 minutes per game. I'm not saying he should be the favorite. I wouldn't pick him over Hawkes or Reed Shepard, among others, as my early season pick, but he at least belongs in the conversation because I'm not seeing him on any of the sports books. He's not on BetMGM, not on FanDuel, not on DraftKings. He's not on any of the prediction markets. He's not on Polymarket. He's not on Kalshi. He is not listed as a sixth man of the year candidate anywhere. And I just think that's crazy with what he does offensively for this team as a three-point shooter, as a screener, as a facilitator on a dribble handoffs, as a guy who brings the ball up the floor in transition. Defensively, this year, teams are testing him. They're scoring only 0.68 points per isolation when defended by Sandro. So I just look at him and I'm like, the dude is just a rock solid, good all-around basketball player, a non-traditional style six man of the year candidate, but I think he belongs in like the top five-ish or so, but he's not even listed anywhere. I just think it's outrageous. Is it because Skeets? Nobody in America watches the Raptors? Is that what it is? Are all the Canadian Raptors fans right? I think that's what it is. This is evidence of that.
I think that's a part of it for sure. It's shocking he's not even on the list.
No.
Like, look, he's not going to win it. He's not going to win it. But that is weird that he's not on the list because at the very least, his buddy Flava Flav would come in and drop a couple hundred on his chances to win sixth man. But yeah, this is going to sound crazy when the words come out of my mouth. But Mamu is in the conversation as one of the greatest free agent signings in Raptors history.
Wow.
Okay? He is. It's not a great list. I'm sorry. It really isn't. But he's been that good in getting him in free agency this year. And he deserves to be at least on the short list right now, early on, for a six-man candidacy because he's done all the things that you listed. He's just... You saw it in the clips there you were showing. He's shockingly more athletic than he sort of appears. He's got the balding head and like sort of the lumbering body. He's very athletic and he's been great, great off the bench for the Raps this season. So yeah, he should at least be plus 4,000 on FanDuel or something like that to win six man. That sounds about right to me.
Yeah. He should be on the list. It's crazy that he's actually not on the list. Raptors have been very, very fun to watch this year. Hopefully RJ is able to be healthy for those NBA Cup games as well. Because who knows? They could beat the Knicks. They could end up in Vegas. That's possible.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very possible. Toronto. I will always have Toronto as a place that I have a very fond memories of, in part because of 6 years ago, 6 years ago now, when I did the Dunk on Cancer fundraiser and I hosted a podcast in Toronto. And I will always appreciate you guys for joining that night. Like, it was just such a fun. I remember how excited the crowd was having you guys all on stage. For the Toronto Raptors segment that we did during the finals that year. Such a good time. That was awesome.
You could tell from that photo who was leading that podcast. Look at professional looking KOC there. Everybody else, mad casual. God. This guy's in the dress shirt. Tucked
my
in
only
jeans
regret is tucking that in. Why'd I tuck in the dress shirt? I was showing off the belly. What a dumb move. That's my only regret from
That's
that
incredible.
Night. Nailed everything else except for that.
Yeah, we got Lili there, obviously, formerly with the Starters, our crew, and that's Will Liu in the back. Fantastic
legend,
one of my favorite Raptors podcast. Hello and welcome. Yeah, Will Liu's awesome. I got to hoop with Will when I was home in Toronto for a while, right before the start of the season. He's a bucket. Will Liu can play, guys. He's a shooter. He's a big man. He's like, he plays like Mamu now that I think about it.
Really? Wow. All-around player. Yeah. I'm not surprised. That dude knows ball. That dude knows ball. He's really one of the things I wanted to ask you that night, but it wasn't appropriate to do that night. It wasn't appropriate. What was it like to get a wedgie from Shaq?
It wasn't appropriate. I think that was the perfect time to ask me. Well, it hurt because he took it very seriously. And he straight up ripped my underwear. I do, like, it's right up the ass crack, everybody. Look at him. Now he's reaching. He's trying to rip it. The scariest part was, for those that don't know, this is back in the Starters days at NBA TV. We track wedgies when the ball gets stuck between the rim and the backboard. And we had gone through like a long drought where we hadn't had a wedgie in a while. Somebody came up with the idea, like, let's pray to the wedgie gods by sacrificing one of ourselves and get a wedgie. And Shaq was like, he just happened to be around. We went and asked Shaq, he's like, hey, do you want to give somebody a wedgie live on air? He's like, immediately, like, yes, let's go. And so we pulled straws on the air, live on the air. So I didn't know I was getting it in advance, right? And I pulled the short straw. And the scariest part, though, was Shaq behind me and like doing the whole Officer Shaq thing where he was like, hands up on my head. And he's like kicking my legs apart. And it was scary, legit scared, until then he got me like up in the air and my feet were going like that for a second. So yeah, I'm still feeling it a little bit, to answer your question, but a legendary moment, I guess, in my weird 20 years of doing this.
Hey, I mean, you guys are absolutely legends, and yeah, it's definitely one of the legendary moments. You're right. I should have asked you that night. In Toronto, but crazy. Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, the fact he ripped it. What? I mean, not surprising, oh, yeah. Shaq, but that must have shocked you in the moment. It's like, really?
Well, I almost was like, I think I'm even yelling "rip it" because it was hurting more it not ripping. If you know what I mean. So I'm like, rip it. I don't care. So like, get it over with. So unfortunately it was me, but I guess fortunately in a weird way that I have this very strange story that I'm sure I'll be sharing on my deathbed.
Hey, I'd say fortunately. It's a fortunate moment, and it's such an unusual thing in an NBA career. We're very lucky to do what we do, and you guys are legends doing what you do with No Dunks, and very much thank you for coming on today, Skeets.
Appreciate it, KOC. We'll have to have you on No Dunks, and I'll have to come back and do this again later in the year.
Would love to. Thank you, man. Big thank you again to J.E. Skeets. Be sure to check out No Dunks if somehow, for some reason, you haven't heard of the show. They're awesome. They've been doing this for 20 years. As he said, go check out No Dunks with J.E. Skeets. Thank you to Emmy and the whole team for producing today's episode. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music. We'll be back again on Thursday. I got Tom Haberstroh, as always, and then Tate Frazier is going to be joining me for our edition of Draft Class. Looking forward to that. Appreciate you giving us the time listening to the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a good rest of your day.